Hi everybody. So I'm Jason. I am most definitely an alcoholic and an addict. Sorry, I made some notes here so I don't get off track too far. Now I can't remember where I put them. There. Okay. I'm going to try to stick to a little bit of a format here. what it was like. Right out of the chute was pure chaos. I mean, just sheer chaos. I hit the ground running, and I was like a dog chasing a car. I wouldn't know what to do if I caught the thing, and I would not stop running. Now they would call that ADHD, but they didn't have that back then. This was the 70s. I was born in rural Minnesota, very rural. Very rural, as in a half mile away was the closest neighbor, and that was my father's parents. later on in life, I found this word that described me very well. It's a German word, Schadenfreude. It's not a literal translation, but basically it means taking joy in the folly of others. And that was definitely me as a kid and a teenager and somewhat as an adult too. because of the situation that, you know, where we were, I didn't have a lot of friends or even options for friends growing up. So I spent a lot of time alone, just doing things by myself. I grew up just, you know, crashing mini bikes and building go-karts and hurting myself, and ended up in the ER so many times for hitting my head on something that I knew the, most of the staff by name by the time I was 16 or so. I always had, even back then, I had a, hold my whatever I have and watch this attitude. The grade school I went to was so small. It was 30 kids. K through six was about 25 to 30 kids each, and they were all within yelling distance of each other. It's just stupid small. Looking back at that, I can tell how hyper I was because there weren't a lot of people who could stand being around me. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She grew up in a town similar to where I grew up, but a bunch of miles south. I don't know, 100 miles south. She grew up, her sister got sent to a convent for getting pregnant. Her dad was an extreme alcoholic. He managed a bar and he lost all that. He was part owner of it. And her two younger brothers, she ended up raising for the most part because my grandmother divorced my grandfather and had to work more than one job to keep food on the table. Now keep in mind, this is a very small town, strict Irish Catholic place. You don't divorce. That'll come up later. My dad, he grew up right next door to where I grew up. He is a farm boy. So I wasn't a farm boy, but I was within the farm. So I did do a lot of stuff with that growing up. In my life though, he was gone a lot for work, kind of a Monday to Friday thing on the road. He would install and maintain gas stations, basically. He was the leather belt on bearskin kind of guy. And with me being how I was, there was a lot of that. Mom was more slap across the face, the soap in the mouth kind of lady. But she loved it, or well, I shouldn't say she loved to, but she ended up telling dad a lot on the weekend what I messed up during the week and then I'd get punished later and all that happy shit. I remember actually very vividly my first beer. I don't remember exactly time frame, but I remember it happening. I was 4 or 5. I didn't know what beer was. I knew what it was, but I didn't understand it. I just thought it tasted good. At age 5, I got sick, and when they checked, they found a birth defect where they had to go and do some surgery on my kidneys. And so today I have 1.5 functional kidneys. Maybe only half after my life, but that was pretty tough for a 5-year-old. Because of that, I remember having to be hooked up to a pee bag at night, because after the surgery, you know, you can't control whatever. I remember having to bring more than one pair of pants to school. And people noticed when you change your pants, even when you're, you know, 7 years old, whatever. The worst part actually was the checkups. I remember standing, I don't remember all of them, obviously, it was a couple times a year, but I remember one very vividly. I was 5 or 6, and I was standing there looking at my mom across the room, crying, telling me that it's okay, don't worry about it, it's okay. And at the same time, I had this 50-year-old dude checking me. So that was always a wonderful experience to have to voluntarily do that. If I would have been older, it wouldn't have been as big a deal. My dad taught me a lot of things by me watching him, which I did learn a lot. But he had this thing where he would not let me do it. He would just, I don't even know how to explain it. Just like a control thing. Like no one else would do it right if he had to do it. But that also taught me to do things when people weren't around and no one was watching, to manipulate situations when I did get caught doing something, and then how to cover my tracks real well. Because I would get disciplined severely when I'd get caught using the welder when I was 9, you know. I learned a temper from Dad. I think I had it already anyway, but it was definitely cultivated by him. But I also learned that I was the one that needed to control my temper, not him. Because I started to beat up on my sister and other kids and things like that. And so I would get, there are so many catch 22 hypocritical things like this that I found throughout my life. It's just crazy. Third grade, I had my first sexual experience. That was just, whatever. I got kicked out of Sunday school for asking why too many times. I knew that I had a lot of relatives that I didn't know. I could never understand that. But much later I found out that my mom and her direct family, well, my grandmother and all her kids were disowned because they divorced. So to this day, I've got probably 100 relatives in that area, and I have no idea who they are. And I really don't care at this point, but by that time, being that young, I knew I had a very healthy insignificance factor, or mentality. I didn't feel connected to anyone or pretty much anything. And I always felt that I couldn't do anything right. So, and I think that had a lot to do with that, which meant that I didn't do it his way. Then I hit middle school and things got worse. I never fit in with the kids in the little town because I wasn't technically a farm kid, and they were. I went to the middle school, and in the big city, it was like 6,000 people or whatever. But I didn't fit in with those kids either, because to them I was just some bohunk country boy. I actually remember getting in a fight because I started to change my what kinds of clothes I was wearing, and I was trying to be cool, and that wasn't good. So we're gonna kick his ass. So eventually I got caught up with the wrong crowd, of course, because they're the misfits that, they didn't care as much about your clothes or your hair, or who your parents were, how much money you had or didn't have, whatever. But the other thing that they did was drink, smoke, party. That's what we did. I mean, that started at 12, 13. Even being that young, being out in the boonies like that, you could get away with things like this. A bunch of us pooled our money together, bought a car, and we'd drive it around the gravel roads out in the sticks, drinking. That's what we would do. And I wasn't even old enough to drive. Just to kind of give you a picture, I got really good at manipulating and lying. So, all this partying and drinking and driving and all this stuff and whatever else, it was just more things to hide. It wasn't a big deal. I could convince myself of the lie before I even told it to you. Before I even said it, I was convinced of it. At one point I ran away, discovered blackouts, but in that mentality, not being able to remember things like that when you're partying was considered a weakness. You weren't a man, couldn't handle it, whatever. Then around 15, the suicides and really messed up people dying really messed up ways started. From 16 to about 25, almost like clockwork, every year there was somebody that from my circle or my past circles that either took their own life or died horrifically. I quit school at 16. I went to an alternative learning program. I got kicked out of there because I basically attacked one of the teachers, but they were physically trying to remove me and a guy's sister from the utility room or whatever. But what he didn't know was I had permission from his boss to be there because her brother the day before had just died. After getting my own car and stuff like that, got my first girlfriend. Ooh, right? And about a month into that, I found out that the only reason she was dating me was because she was trying to make her boyfriend jealous, so he wouldn't leave her. So that kind of sucked. About that time is when we started to hear rumors of a field that would grow marijuana. So we found it, drove a car out there in the middle of the night, had a big old 81 Cutlass Supreme with a huge trunk. So we just popped the trunk and ran out in the corn and started, because it was corn on the outside and weed on the inside. So we started pulling up plants and just filled the whole trunk up. Short version of that is somebody decided that we shouldn't be doing that and decided to call the police. So at 16, I was, if I wouldn't have been a juvenile, I would have been a felon right then and there, because that was over a pound and a half. it's funny, but it's not pride. I got my first alcohol-related driving offense at 17. I wasn't over the limit, but I was a juvenile. So they took me to the police station, did the paperwork, took me back to the car and said, go home. I don't want to see you again tonight. I paid a fine or something. Then I found a job in one of the factories up there, which is one of the few things you can do because there's just not a lot there. But I actually liked that job and I stayed there for quite a while. But by the time I hit 21, I had 8 to 10 minor consumptions, is what they call it up there. And it was just getting worse. My mom told me, there's nothing for you here but trouble. You know, do something. So I moved to Minneapolis. So I had more options to work, party, repeat. That went on for a long time. Almost burnt down my apartment building because I passed out with a pizza in the oven. Just stupid shit. I got pulled over in 96. And they didn't give me a DUI. They gave me something else because I was like right at the legal limit and whatever. Depression started to set in. I was drinking alone because there was nobody around, you know, that wanted to drink, whatever. It got so bad that I couldn't actually feel emotions anymore. And that actually scared me. Once I got there, I thought it'd be great because I didn't have to deal with all my BS, but I hated it. And at one point I got good and loaded, cut my wrists, laid down and said, the universe gets to decide. And obviously they all come of that. Then I found some therapy and some medications, which the first ones made things worse. That was horrible. I found out that my dad's parents had always hated my mom because she stole their little boy. We were right next door. I don't know what the big fucking deal was, but somehow I knew that. They weren't grandparents. They were the neighbors, you know, in their actions towards me and my sister. And by that time I didn't, you know, I was like, yeah, whatever. So I was in the factory working one day and this temp lady started working there and she was there for a few weeks, whatever. But we got to be friends and I was working on a machine one day and she said, you know what, you'd probably get along really well with my daughter here, you know, blah, 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 blah. So on and so forth. So she didn't live with her mom, you know, she was off by herself, had her own job and everything, whatever. So we started dating. And 5-6 months or so into that, her birthday came around and I realized I had no idea how old this girl was. But, I mean, she had her own place and whatever. So I asked her and she said, I'm going to be turning 16. I was 23. That, yeah. And turns out mom was a certified. Yeah, so that ended very abruptly. There's a whole story with that, but then I met Shane, the guy I worked with. We redefined painting the town red for a long time. We were known by a lot of people that we didn't know around Minneapolis just from our antics. I got my first official DWI in 2000. I got my second one in 2001. Because of all that, I decided, you know what, we need to change some stuff. So I moved to Florida because that works. That's a better place. there's nothing there for me to get in trouble. And honestly, it just didn't work out financially because it's such a different way of life than it is where I came from. So I ended up back in my old job back in Minneapolis, living downtown in the city where I could walk to all the fun. So, hey, I'm being smart. I'm not driving. I'm just walk, take cabs. Well, I can't tell you how many times I didn't know where I was and just stumbling around Minneapolis and whatever. Then I was visiting Florida, and I had left my motorcycle down there so for me to use when I visit. And the short version of that is they did some really shady stuff, and they charged me with a felony DUI. But they figured out that they did do these shady things, and they reduced it to reckless driving and all this. The catch with that was I had to be on probation. But because it was interstate probation, it had to be the felony probation office, whatever. So fine. I just filled out a piece of paper and sent it in every month and made sure not to get in trouble. I had moved into a friend who I worked with's house to save money. And in order to, so that I didn't get in trouble, I thought, well, my new roommate, has a hookup. So I'll just take all kinds of ecstasy and smoke weed and do all this kinds of fun shit. And then I won't drink. For the purpose at hand at the time, that worked great. Because I didn't go anywhere. I didn't want to go anywhere when I did it. I had people come to me. So, then I met a woman who is a very toxic relationship. And she called me up one day and said, I got something to tell you. And I don't know how to do it. So I'm like, okay, well, you prepared me. Tell me. And she's, I can't do it. Fine, come over tomorrow and we'll sit down. So we did that, and she still couldn't say it. So she hands me an envelope, and I open it up, and I'm like, uh-oh. And I realize it's the unpaid, it's the only reason she told me, unpaid bill for the abortion. That I didn't know about, you know. That led to another friend who I didn't know was interested in me, and I wasn't interested in them, but they took me to a wedding reception thing with an open bar to cheer me up. And that ended up with me pulling a guy halfway through a drive-through window and fighting with him. And that violated my probation in my last month. So from there, I got to go do 7 days in the workhouse, workhouse program. And when I got there, they said, oh, you're not going to work because we're going to hold you for 28 days out of 30 that we can, and then we're going to release you to be extradited to Florida. Don't recommend that. It's not like the movie. but when I got there, they said, time served, go home. Thanks. after that, things just really started to spiral. I couldn't even keep a job. I really did want to die. And I know at one point I did have a gun in my mouth and just hoping for the ability to do it, but didn't happen. I ended up breaking a bar mirror because I threw the mug at it because of this woman. I ended up getting beat up and took off walking. And the next thing I know is I wake up in my apartment in paper scrubs, no recollection of anything. Apparently some cops had seen me falling, stumbling, and I told them I got hit by a car because, you know, it wasn't cool to get beat up, you know? Which they didn't believe anyway, but you know, whatever. But I was in an ambulance and in the hospital, and my dad drove 3 hours down. And when I woke up, I found out about all this. He was on the couch. I still don't remember it. So after that, eventually I ended up back at mom and dad's, because things weren't happening at all. Which there I continued to drink. I just crawled all the way in the bottle. After a few months, I decided, I kind of settled out and decided, you know, it can't get much lower, right? So why not? Fuck it. Let's go to school. Let's go to college. Finally ready. I'm 30 at this point. And I met the girl of my dreams. Mm-hmm. Who decided to, this will be intermixed through the whole thing, but she was in and out for a month, 2 weeks, 2 months at a time, but then would just drop off the face of the planet for a decade. This went on. She got married twice, had another kid, and just every time she'd just come back to me when things didn't go her way or whatever. And so that was a great experience too. In college, I really did excel though. I got to choose to go back to school. I got to choose what I was going to learn. I absolutely loved that. And I took on as much as I could, which was way too much. 23 credits and an overnight job is too much. After that was the first year, and after that, I kind of cracked. I ended up in a bar just to have one or two. And then I found out that it's Cinco de Mayo. So hell yeah, I want 5-for-1s. You know, I'm not gonna turn that down. I had the sense after that to not drive. I remember sitting in the car and calling everyone in my phone with the old flip phone, StarTAC, back in the day. And not a soul answered the phone or called me back. Not my family, not my friends, not anyone. Well, that upset me. So I said, okay, where's the closest place I know? And I drove. And got DUI number 3 in 2009. I ended up going into treatment over Christmas break, which was just stupid because I knew everyone, including people that worked there, and I partied with all of them at some point. Then the meetings were even worse. It was the classic, you know, 50 plus meeting, and I'm 30. But they're all the old angry, crotchety, rah, 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 rah. I'd rather be drinking, but I have to be here, you know, that kind of thing. Somehow I was able to pull it together. I had to spend 2 of the last 3 months of my college career going to and from jail. And I still somehow was able to pull off a 365 and honors. So I'm still so proud of that. I held out for a little bit, got the job I wanted with the company I wanted, moved back to Minneapolis. And I was on the pilot program for the Smart Start car blower thing in Minnesota. But I learned, before they even installed it, I was like, oh, I know how I'm going to get around this. I'll just drink at home and not go anywhere for a couple of days, whatever. So that was pretty much useless. I was able to buy my first new car. I was so happy. I was like a kid that got a puppy, the biggest candy bar on the planet, and Mickey Mouse all in the same day. You know, didn't know it could be like that. You know, it's stupid. And I met Erica, and yeah, she was a lady I worked with at a completely different part of the business, but, and that was started out pretty good, but it ended up being pretty bad because she turns out she had been snorting opiates for by the time she quit, it was almost 10 years. That was pretty bad. I got a little bit greedy and decided I want more money for my expertise in my field. So I ended up leaving the company and going to work for one of their customers in Houston. Things were going well. And then Joni called me. And the short version of that is I ended up moving back to Minnesota after a year at Houston, to which she decided to string me along for a whole big 2 weeks before she pulled her disappearing act. On top of that, the company I was working for up there, I was sexually harassed by my manager, who was also the owner's boss. Got fired from there, ended up in court with them, blah, 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 right back in the bottle. And then I decided, okay, screw this. And, you know, I never gave it a good shot. I'm going to go back to Texas. But I ended up in Austin. And things started out super positive. Awesome apartment, good paying job. Doing what I wanted to do, but over time, just where I was working, how they were doing things, it was ridiculous. So eventually I at this point, I still only knew less than 10 people in all of Texas. So I was alone a lot and I started to get antsy. I started going out to the bars just to meet people and, you know, get loaded, I guess. Once I blacked out and woke up in a ditch, a ditch full of rocks, like a drainage ditch, and I'd hit my head, lost a boot, had to figure out which direction the car was and drove home. That, you know, should have been a little bit of a sign, but, that went on for a while. Then one night I was at the little, neighborhood bar. I got in a, heated discussion about, something or other, music, something, but I don't know. And, I wasn't pissed off, but I was like, "Arr." So on my way home, I decided, let's go play with the car. Let's go get pulled over at 106 and a 50 while just shit hammered. So that's what I did. And yeah, I remember most of it. But I'm actually glad that I had the blackout part of it, because I had told myself a long time before that if anything happened again, if I was dumb enough to put myself in that situation again, I was just going to drop the hammer and look for the first solid object I could. And I didn't even think that because I wasn't completely present. I remember sitting in jail, or laying on the slab, I should say. And this is where things changed, because, you know, I did like everybody else does when you get in trouble. You know, oh, if you get me out of this, you know, I don't believe in God, but if you get me out of this, I won't do it again. But this time I didn't do that. I very vividly remember laying in on that concrete with the blanket over my head and crying, saying, I can't live like this anymore. And I think that's where I changed inside. I've had to spend $35,000 on a lawyer. I have these monitors, which are $400 or $500 a month. I was just on this weird autopilot thing after that. Had to fly to Denver for work, and that was a big hassle. I didn't know where I was going or what to do. And I said, I don't know what to do. So I reached out for help, and I found Awesome Recovery. And I told him, hey, you know, I'm just looking, you know, checking out places, you know, when would you be able to get me in? And I said, well, you know, maybe a couple of weeks I'll come in. And they said, how about Monday? I said, whoa, wait, that's like not long. So, but that's what I did. I came into Awesome Recovery, and I decided when I walked through the door, I the only thing in my head was shut your mouth, open your ears, and actually hear what's being said to you. And that's what I did the whole time I was there. I can't believe that I was that person inside that I was before that I could change that much that quickly. It's mind boggling. I had quite a few epiphanies at Awesome Recovery. I got to let go of Joni. I got to find a higher power that I understand. And I got to find a group of people that I can lean on so that I can actually work this program and do it and try another way to live. That being said, the road hasn't been perfect. My court stuff still is getting pushed out. That was 15 months ago. Technically, I'm still facing 5 years. They're working out a deal to where I shouldn't, at least I won't go to prison. But I'll still be a felon. So that takes some fun things out of life. But waiting for all the chips to drop for my court, my freedom, my money, my place to live. They're all up in the air, and I don't know where they're coming down. I don't have a lot of control, so I'm just working on accepting it. In the interim there, I was trying to start a business with a guy down in Houston, and that pretty much flopped. And then COVID hit. But I've got medications that are right for me. I've been able to be honest with myself, to myself. I've started to learn to see through my own bullshit. I got a good sponsor who cares about my well-being. And I get the opportunity to, I didn't think I'd ever care enough to help somebody and get anything out of that. And a couple of you know, I was like the addict, the free addict cab service for a lot of months after when I first went home, just because I could. And I knew what it was like to not be able to drive and get around. I'm working on accepting life as it unfolds and not trying to control everything. it's going to work out how it's going to work out, regardless of what I do. So, and really, on a day-to-day basis, all I really do is I read daily reflection every morning. I go to meetings. I found that I actually like meetings. I actually like all of you people because you're nuts like me. Well, maybe not that bad, but I read. I try to read at least one page in my big book every night. I do my nightly inventories. And that's, on a day-to-day, that's all. That's all I have to do. And the rest just kind of works out. I have some real friends that care about me, care about what happens to me, and aren't afraid to call me on my shit, which that's, to me, that's a, one of those ways where you just proved your love, man. I get to be here to share this wild story that is, has a lot of holes in it. Trust me, there's a lot more. and hopefully it helps somebody, because I know when I was at my lowest there, when I got to hear other people were the same or worse, I got the opportunity to get that little spark, that little spark of hope that it, well, if they can do it, it was fucked up shit over there, you know, like maybe this dumb white boy from the north can do it. One of the most important things, I think, though, is I asked myself quite often, am I happy now? And every time I come to one of these meetings, even if it's online, I'm happy. A room full of addicts makes me happier than hell. alone, I don't think I've ever felt as content inside myself as I do now. I never felt like I was, like I fit anywhere until I sobered up. And yeah, I actually feel like I belong somewhere now. Thank you.
Great job, Jason.
Good job, Jason.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you very much.